From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. In our ongoing series examining nations that have successfully tackled the coronavirus pandemic, we turn today to Cuba, a nation that has been hindered for decades by crippling U.S. sanctions, and which nonetheless prides itself for a highly educated population and a large proportion of skilled doctors. The rate of COVID-19 infections in Cuba has been lower than in many American, Latin American nations, and very early government action has helped the infection rate to drop. Cuban doctors, who are famous for their medical diplomacy, have been flying to nations like South Africa to assist in the pandemic. My guest is Abraham Vela. He's a physician who has treated COVID-19 patients and a graduate of the Cuban Latin American School of Medicine. He practices in Southern California, where we are based. Welcome to the program, Dr. Vela.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So first, what has Cuba's response been? I mentioned they started acting on this and warning residents in January. They also stopped travel to and from the island. And of course, it is easier for island nations to control the virus because it's easier to control the borders. But what specific actions has the government taken?
So Cuba has a method that is really applied. It can be applied to many different situations, including disaster medicine like hurricane, earthquakes. And we apply these similar, I call them humanistic measures, where everybody's taken into account. And the focus is mainly to save lives and prevent further lives from being lost. So I'll give you the example that I say we, because I was part of this for 6 years in Cuba, and how we dealt little endemics like dengue fever or cholera, and now, of course, with the new COVID. So what Cuba does is that it focuses all of its forces in the public healthcare system. And instead of us physicians waiting for patients to arrive to us at the hospital or the clinics, we go out to the community by foot every day, knock on people's doors, door by door, and we screen people in their community, in their home, and if necessary, hospitalize people to prevent further transmission. Of course, people who have suspected the disease then will be hospitalized and immediately receive treatment. And so that's kind of a different approach of how medicine is practiced in many other countries, specifically here in the U.S., where I practice now, where, like I said, it's us waiting for patients to come to us, whereas in the Cuban model, it's more of an active role and being involved with the community gets involved. And that's been hugely successful, even now with the COVID pandemic, and we've seen it being successful also with the dengue fever in Cuba, which is very common disease that happens in the Caribbean and in Latin America.
It seems as though Cuba's experience with, tackling public health crises and also knowing how to make do with very little, how to stretch resources and, have an elastic medical approach to public health crises. It seems as though those are advantages to how it has been able to approach this crisis, compared to the U.S., where we don't have that level of experience and our healthcare resources are basically generally available for those who can afford them.
Mm-hmm. And that's something huge that you said, access to these services. Like you said, U.S. is actually one of the richest countries in the world. We shouldn't have difficulty accessing healthcare system here. But unfortunately, more people don't have access than people that do. And that's it should be unacceptable. Like you said, Cuba is considered a country with low resources. That's true. Yet I consider Cuba to be a very rich country. They have the human capital that often a lot of countries lack, the human capital with the right humanism to be able to stretch those resources, like you said.
And of course, the number of doctors per capita in Cuba is significantly higher, right? Is that a deliberate long-term approach by the Cuban government for decades to invest in medical education?
Yes. And imagine in a world where you have access to your physician down the street, two blocks away. You have access to a physician that actually grew up in the community where you're from. So it's a physician that understands all the problems that exist in your community that improve in your household. This physician has probably seen you grow up since you were a child. And that type of care is incomparable, is invaluable. And like I said, it's an emphasis on prevention. You know, when you have access to this kind of care, you will be able to prevent different diseases, therefore saving on the use of resources that will otherwise be wasted.
What about access to testing, access to ventilators? I mean, you can have highly educated medical personnel, but you also need equipment, some of which is quite expensive. And I imagine the last few months, Cuba has had to compete with nations like the US and European nations for access to tests.
Yeah, let me address the medication issue first. Indeed, it's no secret to anybody that Cuba struggles economically, and a huge part of it, I would say the major part, is the genocidal blockade that the U.S. has imposed in Cuba now for over 50 years. I say genocidal because it's a way of choking a country, trying to starve them from resources, from food to medications to medical equipment. Fortunately, Cuba developed a very strong medical laboratories. They produce many of their own medications, from HIV to antihypertensives, that have been very successful and are even used throughout the world. Cuba has been able to use it as an economic stimulant as well. Currently, specifically in the COVID, they have used some medications, some antivirals like the interferon gamma that has been used in other diseases, including cancers. And it has been shown to be successful in Cuba. It has been used also in Italy, where it has also been successful. Resources-wise, it's very difficult. It's very difficult because even if Cuba has access to ventilators, or even if they have ventilators, a lot of them were made either in European countries, in the US. And imagine having one little part of any ventilator or any breathing machine. If that little part does not work anymore, Cuba may have the ventilator, but without that part, without access to that part, without access to the market where they can purchase that part, they're left without a ventilator. And that's a daily struggle, not only in the medical field, but in life in general in Cuba. It comes from transportation to the medical field. It's a daily struggle. And that's why applying the method of prevention and controlling diseases in Cuba is so important, because of those lack of resources that we have.
And of course, under the Obama administration, the U.S. and Cuba came closer than they have had in many decades to ending that embargo. There was a warming of ties. This was arguably one of the success stories on a foreign policy stage of the Obama administration. And as soon as Trump got into power, that started getting unraveled, right?
Definitely. And it was something miraculous that happened at the end of 2015, starting 2016, when President Obama visited the island. And a lot of accords were made. There were, like you said, there was a they became very close, closer than ever. And there was a lot of market for medical supplies, for agriculture, and it was more stimulating for both countries. Again, that type of trading benefits both countries, again, because Cuba has a lot to offer that the U.S. doesn't have. Unfortunately, with the change of our presidency, of course, now their relationship is more broken, kind of going back to the Cold War era. So it's difficult to say. It's difficult for a country to be swimming back and forth. Fortunately, Cuba does have a lot of allies throughout the world, and Cuba has been very good to a lot of countries throughout the world and does receive a lot of support that way. But ending this blockade will be, I can't just imagine how much more Cuba will be able to accomplish without having this blockade imposed on them.
Would it be possible to know if Cuba could have saved more lives of its own residents had the embargo not been in place?
My direct answer will be that I'm not sure, actually. Despite the lack of resources, despite the lack of ventilators that there might be in Cuba, Cuba is one of the fewest countries that with less impact from COVID-19, at least in the lives lost even when you compare it to countries like Sweden. But yes, I mean, having access to these life-saving resources definitely will influence a country's success. You know, we struggled here in the United States.
And Cuba has also been able to send doctors to countries like South Africa to help, where, you know, South Africa has been quite hard hit by the COVID-19 mm-hmm. virus. And it's quite remarkable that this small country has, you know, that struggles with, you know, because of the embargo, has so many doctors that are so skilled that it can actually share them with the rest of the world. And this is something I mentioned, the medical diplomacy. This is something that Cuba has become known for. And it seems as though it has continued that during this pandemic.
Yes. And for every pandemic and for every natural disaster, it's been one of the core principles of the revolution. And like you said, when I mentioned earlier, Cuba to me is not a poor country. It's actually a very rich country because of the human capital that they have and the way they apply that humanism, not only to their own people, but to the rest of the world, many times with nothing in return. I know there's Cubans in my home country, Guatemala, where the government doesn't want them there because they're giving free medical care to the population, causing other organizations to lose profits in that country. And it's just the capitalist mentality, you know, healthcare now is being used as a profit. And it's amazing to see how this small island of about 12 million people is able to send thousands of medical workers, not just doctors, it's nurses. A lot of times they send teachers to train people in these countries. I'm a product of this internationalism myself. Cuba has trained over 30,000 international medical graduates in Cuba. And it's unfortunate how we suffer a lot from the media, and we're often told that we're in Cuba to be brainwashed, that it's a project of Cuba to gain economic power. But being there and experiencing it was nothing pure. It was nothing like that. It was pure. It was internationalism. It was solidarity, and it's beautiful to see that. It's beautiful to be trained by physicians that have that passion to do that.
So you mentioned Cuba has a population of about 12 million. There are currently, as of the day that you and I are speaking, fewer than 20 new cases being reported per day in Cuba. So far, there have been fewer than 2,000 confirmed cases and a total of 79 deaths from COVID-19, which is quite remarkable. But some media outlets based in the U.S., in Miami in particular, suggesting that the Cuban government might be hiding the true extent of COVID-19. Infections. How do you respond to that?
Mm-hmm. Again, like especially if it's coming from the U.S., specifically from the area of Miami, it's media tactics really to undermine a Cuban revolution that has proven to be successful despite the economic blockade that's imposed on them. I, as a medical student in Cuba and as part of the healthcare system in Cuba, I never witnessed tampering of numbers, hiding of the numbers. On the contrary, Cuba has always been really transparent to show that another world is possible, to show that there's another method of doing things. And actually, as of today, I believe now Cuba is actually 4 days without any deaths, if I'm not mistaken, mm-hmm. as well, from coronavirus. So it has a lot to show.
I understand that Cuba is cooperating quite successfully with the World Health Organization, unlike the United States, which has threatened to freeze funding and accused the WHO of politicizing the virus, sort of used the WHO as a cudgel against China. So Cuba is working with the World Health Organization. Is it in general participating and helping and supporting other nations as well when it comes to the COVID-19 response, not just through the medical diplomacy we talked about, but even sort of sharing technology such as the drug that you were mentioning earlier that Cuban doctors have successfully used?
Definitely. Cuba has always worked very closely with the World Health Organization. We actually in Cuba apply a lot of the models that the World Health Organization uses, and so does the World Health Organization. They apply a lot of the Cuban models in throughout the countries. Cubans have trained officials from the World Health Organization as well in how to deal with pandemics like this. So their relationship is very close. mentioning the medications used in Cuba, not only for this pandemic, but for other diseases like lung cancer, for diabetes, for prevention of foot amputation. A lot of times those are used as well throughout the world.
How important has it been for Cuba's population as a whole to be highly educated? Here in the United States, we're seeing, unfortunately, massive pockets of ignorance, much of it fed by propaganda, pro-Trump propaganda through Fox News and other right-wing media outlets, a lot of conspiracy theories, claims that the virus isn't real or that it's overblown or that masks don't work or that this is some nefarious plot to undermine Trump's re-election, all of which is undermining the efforts by doctors like yourself to actually rein in this virus. In Cuba, are Cubans in general a lot more receptive to, you know, facts and reality and science?
So in Cuba, there's a saying say that people that do not read are easily misled. And I think that's a huge problem here in the United States. It comes from not only lack of access to education, but the quality of education in our schools as well. When you have a population that has access to good quality education, where information, where our doctors are constantly educating people on the streets, constantly going to their homes, you're going to get a lot better response rather than having us or officials or government telling the population what to do. Working together is a lot more effective, like it is in Cuba. And I've seen it work. I talk to my friends all the time. I see pictures from Cuba. Everybody's really actually working together. Everybody's wearing their masks. Everybody understands that for many reasons, you know, whether you think it's humanistic, whether you think it's not, whether you think it's a secondary game, whether you think Cuba just needs to save resources, it works. And people are more cooperative than here. I think it is a severe lack of education.
Did the government in Cuba impose a lockdown to try to, I know they restricted travel to the island, but was there a lockdown as well? Because especially in poor nations, when you have such a huge percentage of the population with a sort of hand-to-mouth existence, even if nobody would starve to death in Cuba because of government support, to be left jobless or lose a job or just not be able to have access to one's regular salary can sometimes be extremely difficult. What has the economic impact been, and was there even a lockdown imposed?
Yeah, there was a recommendation from the government to remain in house, in shelter, like we had here similar, and those are guidelines that were thrown out by the CDC and the World Health Organization. We're following the similar guidelines as they are. And one of the, unfortunately right now, one of the biggest economic intakes of Cuba is tourism. And of course, Cuba always prioritizes the country's health first and did shut down the borders, just like they did back in H1N1 as well. It suffers a lot. It suffers even more with the blockade that's imposed. But like you mentioned earlier, you won't see a Cuban starve in Cuba. You won't see a homeless Cuban citizen because shelter is also provided. It's a human right. So I think it did make it difficult for many families. But I think it was mitigated by a lot of things, having the right to housing, having the right to food, having the right to education, and having the right to access to quality healthcare as well. Something that many of our Latin American countries, or even here in the U.S., something that we don't have. And I've seen families, for example, in Guatemala, obligated to go out and put their lives at risk because they don't have access to these things. They don't have a right to healthcare. They don't have a right to shelter or to food.
Has the lockdown been eased now that deaths appear to have stopped?
There's a sense of easing. Again, I would advise that I don't know how eased they are yet in Cuba, but I'm sure they're still taking all the precautions necessary to continue to try to prevent the disease from spreading. I think even just in general worldwide, there's a sense of ease, but working at a hospital, I don't see that ease yet. I don't see this stopping now. And I just hope and really wish that it doesn't get worse because of how eased people are now.
How do you view Cuba's president, Miguel Díaz-Canel, his continuing of the Castro legacy? He is, you know, following from Raúl Castro, who, of course, followed from his brother, Fidel. Does he represent a continuation, or is there a newer approach?
That's a good question. I think President Canel actually continues to pursue that revolutionary spirit. He continues to follow the ideas of the revolution, and often many people mistake it with the ideas of Fidel and Raul. And no, it's the idea of a revolution. It's not just a one-person idea, and he continues to embody that. And when times change, things change, and I think Miguel Díaz-Canel has really adapted to those changes and is trying to approach more to the younger populations in Cuba. But I think overall, the spirit is still there. It's not going anywhere. I know there's a lot of speculation that the U.S. was going to come in. I hear a lot of people say, I want to go to Cuba before communism is over. And I tell them, it's not going anywhere. It really isn't.
Finally, Dr. Vela, you are a physician here in the United States. In fact, you're in Southern California, although your medical education was from Cuba. What can you tell us? What would you advise the public in the United States to do to tackle this pandemic, given your experience, not just with COVID-19, but with the Cuban system? You know, it is a very difficult time for Americans. And the worst aspect of it is that there is no clear direction from the federal government.
Yeah, you're right. There isn't. And that causes a lot of anxiety and a lot of insomnia that we've seen lately. What I do recommend people is to continue to practice the self-isolation methods, physical distancing from people, continue to wear your mask, please wash your hands, all the basic precautions that we've been receiving from the CDC and World Health Organizations. And those organizations, I would recommend you follow instructions from. Often we don't get, like you said, we don't get guidance from our government, but these are organizations that have web pages that you can go on and look at the recommendations that we have. Go to your local public health department, ask where we're at in the COVID. I can tell you that here in SoCal, we're still getting cases on the daily. People are still losing their lives daily here, and this is just Southern California. So please just continue to practice that, continue to work together. I know it's difficult. I know people need to get back to work because we don't have similar rights as we all should here. So more people struggle. But that would be what I recommend. Open your mind as well. There's different models out there of doing things. When we vote, we can have a power to change certain things as well. Just keep your minds open. We can change this world.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Dr. Abraham Vela, for joining us today. And good luck. Stay safe out there.
Thank you so much. If you have any questions about becoming a physician in Cuba or how you can support our efforts to end the blockade in Cuba, you can email us at la.us.handsoffcuba@gmail.com. I'll say one more time, la.us.handsoffcuba@gmail.com.
We link to that from our website as well. Thank you so much again for joining us.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
My guest has been Dr. Abraham Vela. He's a physician who has treated COVID-19 patients, a graduate of the Cuban Latin American School of Medicine. He's based here in Southern California, where we are based as well. And we've been discussing how Cuba is tackling the pandemic and lessons that the U.S. can learn. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.